Welcome to the Teaching Space Podcast, coming to you from Guernsey in the Channel Islands. Hello and welcome to the Teaching Space Podcast. It's Martine here. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm bringing you an interview episode today, and as is my way, I'm going to ask my guest, AJ Smith, to introduce himself to the Teaching Space listeners. So welcome to the show, AJ.
Hi, it's lovely to be here. Hi, Martine. Yes, so I'm a primary school teacher, currently teaching year six in a lovely school in Southwark in fairly central London. Until this time last year, I was a secondary school teacher. So I've recently made the switch over.
Oh, that's fascinating. And that's not something that you hear of a lot of people doing, switching from secondary to primary. I mean, one of the reasons we're going to talk today, we're going to nerd out on productivity stuff. But as part of your introduction, I wonder if you could tell us a bit more about that switch, because that's really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's funny thing was, until basically I was considering the job offer that I had, I hadn't really thought about switching either. What happened was that I was teaching in secondary a couple of years after I qualified, and I just kind of came a bit disillusioned with teaching, a bit sort of like burnt out maybe by the situation that I found myself in. So I left my job, and I sort of threw myself on the mercy of Twitter, of edgy Twitter. And I'm a big fan of edgy Twitter. It's really, really helped my career in many, many ways. And this is just kind of an example of that. But I sort of put out on my Twitter, and I said, I'll have two terms, the spring term and the summer term this academic year, before I kind of want to find a permanent secondary teaching job in September, and I will I'll do anything. I'll come and do cover work, I'll do curriculum work, I'll do maternity leave cover. If you've got any interesting opportunities that you think, do get in touch. So I had, and I was, you know, this was one of those opportunities where you're like, wow, okay, people, this is an amazing career to be in. This is an amazing sector to work in, because people did. They came out and said, let me talk to you about this, let me talk to you about that. And I had a couple of different offers, which was great. And then my current head teacher messaged me on Twitter, and I'd followed her for a while. And she said, we'd love you. We feel like as a school, we've got our curriculum where we want to be. We've just been Ofsted inspected under the new framework, and we've come out outstanding. So we're really happy. But one of the things that we're not happy about is our RE provision. We don't think it's where it should be. How about, you come on board and do a bit of cover teaching and do that? And I said, no, that's a lovely offer. And unlike most of the offers where I was like, oh, I'll go away and think about it, I said, I don't really see myself in primary. It's not really where I wanted to be. But fortunately for me, she was quite persistent, she messaged me again and said, look, really, you should think about it. I think you'd really gel with the school. I think you should come and, she said, I think I want to give you a call. And I remember it very clearly, because I was stood, the school I worked at had a sort of mini bus station and I was shepherding children onto buses. And at the end of that, she said, I'll call you. So she called me and stood there in the cold waiting for all these buses to leave, and I spoke to her, and she convinced me to come for a sort of day, for a tour and for an interview and to teach a lesson. And and I was like, okay, all right. And I remember going home and speaking to my husband and saying, you won't believe this, but I'm going to a primary school.
I love it.
Yeah, so, and I did, and I went, and it's remarkable. It's a remarkable school. As soon as I stepped in, I knew that it was a special school, and I knew that the people who worked there were incredible. Their curriculum was incredible, and the leadership there had a very clear image, a clear idea of what they wanted their school to be like and what they had to offer to other. It wasn't internal. There's a teaching school and a research school there. It was all about sharing that knowledge with other people, which is what really attracted me there. So I turned up in January as a bright-eyed and bushy-tailed new primary teacher. And all through January and February, I was doing cover work across different year groups, and I was sort of beginning the process of replanning their RE curriculum for them. And RE, I should just say, is religious education. I don't know. You have a lot of different people who listen to your podcast. So,
yes.
Yes, so and that was great, and I was loving it, but I was still applying for secondary jobs. I applied for a few different schools in London and around the southeast, thinking that in September I would go back to being secondary. And then the lockdown here in England happened in March, and and I just saw this incredible team of people just swing into action, and overnight they just created a virtual school platform that was so like high quality straight off the bat. The meetings that I was involved in were really like nothing I'd seen working in the private sector. It was really, yeah, it was amazing. When I say it was overnight, I mean literally they went from having a whiteboard with kind of an implementation on it of like, this is what we want to achieve, to maybe 2 days later having something that was live online, and that we still, you know, there hasn't been a fundamental change. Now that we're doing a second go at virtual school, it still looks basically the same, because we'd really clearly thought through the ideas of how we were gonna do this. And so at the same time, a classroom teacher role came up, and I stuck my head around the head teacher's door and said, this might surprise you, but I'm thinking of applying for it. And she sort of said, it doesn't surprise me, because she could see how I'd sort of transformed into like someone who was happy and content in my job. And I've never, ever since I applied for that job back in March, I've never looked back. I've never thought, oh, I wish I was teaching secondary again. No, I mean, I would, maybe in the future I'll go back to secondary, I don't know. But it's this school really that I love, and the environment that I'm in. But obviously it's a whole different set of challenges. And so I was lucky to have these two terms of cover work to adjust to the life of a primary school teacher. But now I'm a year six teacher, and I'm in the classroom sort of on my own. I'm not picking up someone else's curriculum. I'm not picking up someone else's planning. And and I think maybe that's what we'll talk about a bit later, is how I've had to adapt my productivity, my planning, and become a lot more rigorous around those areas, because it is such a different job than what I was used to, but it's a job I love.
I can tell just by the way you're talking about it. There's so much good stuff in that introduction there, AJ. Your head teacher knew what she was talking about, right? She had you pegged for primary from the start, by the sounds of things.
I think she feels like she kind of was almost evangelical about it.
Wow.
And has seen... And I think anyone who knows me, my husband in particular, would say they've seen the transformation. I didn't hate my old job or anything like that. I think I would have been happy staying in secondary, but I almost feel like I found my sort of place to be, as it were, and I'm happy to stick around there and see how things pan out. So
I can really relate to that as somebody who's made quite a dramatic career change in my life. I worked in the finance sector in a senior management role for many, many years. And then I made the controversial and very different move into education. And it was a humongous change, absolutely enormous. But it was the best thing I ever did. There was a bit of a struggle in the very early few weeks. But actually, you know, I've never looked back either. So I kind of understand the gravity of the change that you're talking about.
Do you find you become evangelical in turn? Because I've got many of my friends who are struggling in academia, struggling in sort of like in finance and things like that, and I'm just like, yeah, but have you thought about doing a PGCE? And suddenly and now I'm responsible for this whole recruitment drive of teachers amongst my friends group, because I love it so much. I mean, like I say, I used to work in finance as well, and the professional conversations that we get to have as teachers and educators is wildly different from the kind of the professional conversations you have in the private sector, working in finance or working even when I worked in the NHS, things like that. It's such a different, I mean, I guess EduTwitter is quite a big part of that, but it's such a different professional space that's been a huge part of why I feel more fulfilled as a teacher than I did as an underwriter or something like that.
I completely agree with that. And 100%, I have become evangelical about getting people into teaching, hence this podcast. But also part of my day job is that I am a teacher educator. So I do our very early initial teacher training, which is aimed at people who are working in industry and want to get into teaching further education. So I think that's kind of the epitome of being evangelical about teaching, actually. Yeah,
you're the boots on the ground person actually doing that.
Absolutely. Yeah. One of the reasons that we are having this conversation today, the way I sort of discovered you, that sounds bizarre, doesn't it? The way I discovered AJ was firstly Twitter, which we've mentioned at length, what an important part Twitter has played in your transition into primary school. I mean, that's incredible. And anyone listening who isn't on Twitter, I will make sure that I share AJ's Twitter and my own Twitter. So the minute you get on Twitter, you can give us both a follow, because I think that that you'll want to do that by the time you finish listening. But the way I sort of met you, as it were, was first Twitter, and then I realized you had a YouTube account. And lo and behold, you were YouTube videoing about something I'm very interested in, which is A, productivity, and B, Notion as a platform. In fact, one of my podcast listeners sent me an email saying, oh, there's this chap on Twitter. Oh, sorry, I beg your pardon. There's this chap on YouTube, and he's talking about Notion, and he's very eloquent. You're going to like him, Martin. And he was right. So I dropped you a line and said, love your video, AJ, about Notion. Let's geek out about all things productivity. And this is where we are right now.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I'm still, I think I say even in the video, I'm still very new to all this. I got an iPad fairly recently. And until then, I've, even when I did my degree and things, always been pen and paper. Always been a real like, yeah, no, I don't really believe in ed tech. Yeah, but I'm very skeptical about it. Or I have all these sort of hoops that ed tech has to jump through. I still do, but I don't know, transformational, I guess that word gets thrown around a lot. But using Notion, and especially now moving into this second lockdown and again changing, it's basically a completely different job, isn't it? Teaching from home, teaching in the classroom, adapting. I found Notion pretty much invaluable. And it just allows me some sort of breathing space in terms of that I don't feel like I've got 400 bits of paper floating around. It's all in one place. And that is the, if people aren't aware of Notion, its main benefit is that it is a sort of all in one platform. It does what a lot of other productivity platforms do, but it's all in one place. So I used to use Todoist. It's quite evangelical about Todoist for a long time as a way of managing tasks, but that doesn't link in with a note-taking application. It doesn't link in with a database application. It doesn't link in with linked databases and things like that, and that's where Notion really comes into it for me.
I completely agree with that. And if I'm ever asked what is the number one productivity tip you can give anybody, it would be to have everything, all of your thoughts, all of your to-dos, all of your little notes, everything in one trusted place. And I think that's David Allen getting things done methodology, to have your sort of trusted place where everything goes. And Notion is just ready made for that, without a doubt. So that's one of the reasons I love it as well. Let's rewind just a tiny bit, because I want to just kind of ease into the productivity conversation. You mentioned that your transition from secondary to primary has created some interesting productivity challenges. I wonder if you want to maybe speak about that a little bit, because I'm sure regardless of the sectors that people work in, they'll be able to relate to some of the challenges you describe.
Yeah, I mean, so as a secondary school teacher, you have a lot of repeated jobs and repeated tasks. So I would quite often, when I was planning things as a secondary teacher, it would be very much like I'd draw a simple matrix, and it would be, well, I'd be doing it for these 3 year 8 classes, these 4 year 9 classes, etc. You know, say I had an assessment, end of term assessment. Well, I could see very clearly that I'd be doing that multiple times, and there'd be multiple different forms of marking to do. Same with teaching lessons. So, you know, you'd plan a lesson for year 10, and if you had 4-year 10 classes, you might teach that four times. Now, being an RE teacher actually exacerbates that, because RE often you're only teaching 1 hour a week or 1 hour a fortnight if they're not exam classes. So you do end up with a really, I think at one point I was teaching about 400 children across a 2-week timetable, and I'd teach the same year seven lessons 3 or 4 times. So it's all about keeping on top of that, keeping on top of multiple tasks, perfecting things over time, and then marking. Oh, lordy, lordy, I do not miss the marking side of being a secondary school teacher, because, well, I used to come up with ways to sort of convince myself to mark 5 books at a time, and then I'd have a minstrel, 5 books at a time, then I'd have a Malteser, and then I'd keep track of it. And I was, whatever job I've worked in where I didn't like what I was doing, I would always count down. I remember working in call centers, and I would write each individual minute up for the last hour of the day, and I would count down. It was the same with marking. I would scrub them off my whiteboard as I did them, because of how much I disliked doing it. And I'm trying to think of the exam classes I taught. So 3, 60, 90, probably 180 assessments, you know, full-size exam assessments at the end of each half term, plus mocks, plus Kisei Shri assessments. So the workload as a secondary school teacher is a lot more repetitive. And so you can get into patterns of doing things, and there's a reliable shape to the half term that you can sort of plan out ahead of you. And I think as a primary teacher, it's a different flavor of work. It's a different texture of work, because you have one class that you get to know really, really well, one class, but you only do anything really once. Wait, does that make sense? Yeah, you do most things once. So you teach that grammar lesson once, and then you move on to the next grammar lesson, and then you do the same with maths and English and RE. And like I say, there's more variety in what you teach, obviously, because you teach almost everything except for what specialist teachers cover, like art and drama and things. The marking workload, oh my lord, my school is a real, in fact it's helped write some of the reports and done some of the research towards having little or no marking policies, so we don't really do a great deal of bookmarking, or if we do, it's live marked in class. Yeah. The assessments that we do, because teaching year six, obviously you have SATs assessments at the end of the year, so we still do mocks, and we still do, I mean, every year does maths assessments, and we do English comparative judgment, which Daisy Christodouli talks about. That reduces the drudgery of teaching, so it reduces the repetitive marking, reduces having to bring stacks of books home or sit in your classroom until late at night. And it allows you to focus more as a teacher on the mechanics and the pedagogy of your work. But that is a completely different challenge. It's a totally different challenge. Having more freedom around planning and having more responsibility over a specific group of children, as if you're having to sort of, I don't know quite how to describe it, but you take more of an ownership of your class. So as well as doing ordinary things like teaching the knowledge content, you're also looking after them pastorally more, and you are doing things like organizing Christmas parties, and or we had more of like a Christmas rave this year, because my school has a bizarre good sound system, and we let the year sixes choose some clean versions of songs that they want to listen to.
That sounds amazing.
Well, I don't know how much the other year groups appreciated us taking over the pop hall and turning it into a sort of nightclub. We were actually probably the only nightclub open in London at the time, under the regulations there were. That was great fun. But that kind of thing is a different type of job. And so, you know, my to-do list goes from like, you know, mark 90 to 94, 95 to find the amp, find the aux cable for Christmas party, organize Pringle delivery for Christmas party, plan 6 maths lessons, or at least go over and familiarize yourself with 6 maths lessons, print out these booklets, do that. And so that's, yeah, so it's much more, I don't know, maybe this is romanticizing it, but it's much more no 2 days are the same in primary. And I love that, but it's a different productivity and different planning challenge. And that's why I've had to be a bit more organized in my life, because I can't rely on that repetitive pattern so much. It's a bit more ad hoc at times.
I like how you described your role in primary as having a completely different texture to your role in secondary. And the way you've just described it really illustrates that your to-do list does, by the sounds of things, look really quite different and in many respects a lot more varied. And I guess having that variety without so much repetition, as you say, creates a lot of different productivity challenges. Mm. And this sounds like one of the reasons why you ended up in Notion, this idea of kind of having everything in one space so you could have a real sense of what you've got to do. Is that about right?
Yeah. I mean, I found Notion because I used to be in the slightly cringeworthy now, I suppose, but back in sort of 2013, 14, when I was doing my degree, I was in the StudyBlur community, which was very much like, it was on Tumblr and it was all about, and I, do you know, I was quite, you know, my blog had quite a number of followers. It was all about drawing beautiful notes and being productive and how to read for your degree and how to organize your notes and all of this. There's lots of photos taken in coffee shops back when we were allowed to go to coffee shops. And
back in the day,
yeah, those heady days. And you know, it was great and I loved it. There was some debate towards the end about how much it was sort of aesthetically pleasing over actually productive. But then when I became a teacher, I kind of left all that behind because you don't have time to use 12 different shades of highlighter and stuff like that. And so I just literally had a paper planner and that was it. And I found my paper planner from secondary the other day and it was just crammed of post-its and bits of paper. And I had a bulldog clip on the front and I used to like clip on to the front my to-do list for the day. And then, you know, so it was all paper. There was a kind of system behind it. And then actually some people from that StudyBlur community have now kind of migrated over because just like me, they've gone from being undergraduates to either postgraduates or you know, working in a career, and they've migrated more over towards YouTube now. And that's where I started to see people talking about Notion. And I was looking at videos as well for how to use my new iPad that I wanted to get the most out of it for class. And that's where I came across Notion, and it was quite a steep learning curve, as I'm sure you've had the same experience of like, wow, it doesn't really hold your hand in terms of like how to do things. You end up watching a lot of YouTube tutorials. But yes, once you've fleshed out your own system, it's amazing because you can do all the things you've always read about that are handy for productivity, or you can build it and edit it and change it in a way that incorporates a lot of things that you think are really good practices. But when you're doing it on paper or you're trying to do it across seven different apps,
I know what you mean. I know, and it's gone clean out of my head as well.
Yeah, the amount of time that you put into creating that organizational system does nowhere near meet the threshold for it being effective. Whereas with Notion, once you get to grips with it, so I'll talk a little bit later about how I set up immediately back a couple of weeks ago. I completely changed my setup to be effective for virtual school. But that only took me maybe 45 minutes to totally change things because I knew what I was doing and I knew how to use it. And it probably took me a couple of days of effort to get into it in the first place. But like I say, I watched a lot of YouTube tutorials and that's great. So I don't know. And I've not tried many other different, I mean, I used Evernote back in the day, but I'm pretty stuck on Notion at the moment. I think it's great.
I like how you've described Notion there, and I'm sort of very mindful of the fact that this is an audio rather than a video podcast, so there's not much we can show listeners. Mm. But actually, I've seen Notion described as kind of a box of productivity Lego where you can pretty much build it into whatever you like. And for people like me, and it sounds like you, who aren't sort of afraid to just have a bit of a go and try things out and watch some videos and then try more things out, that's the most fantastic thing. It's the best thing about Notion is that you can build it yourself. But in some respects, for others, it's the biggest barrier to using it because essentially you start with a blank page and you have to just try things out. Now, on the plus side, they've got built-in templates. Mm. So, if anyone's listening to this and thinking, I'd like to have a go, I'd like to see what it can do, I would really recommend starting with some of their built-in templates. I also have some free templates that I'll link to in the show notes so people can try those. But that's pretty much how I got started, was using the built-in templates and then tweaking them to suit my needs. And now I've managed to create a hub where all of my stuff just kind of, all of my productivity related stuff just kind of flows into it and it's working really smoothly. Do you want to chat a bit about how you got set up?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, it is literally, aside from the templates, it's literally a blank page. When you start a new page in Notion, it is a blank page. So you need to, there is that initial time inlay into working out how to use it. And the most powerful element of Notion, and I probably wouldn't be using it if I didn't use these on a regular basis, is linked databases.
Yes.
Where you have I have a task list, which is just like a spreadsheet basically. But that task list, I probably use that in 9 or 10 different pages to draw through. And what you do is you create a linked database and then you set up a series of filters and sorting and things like that. So for example, my task list on my daily planner sorts by, well, is it due today or has it been due in the last couple of days? So I don't see things that are happening in the future. Have I ticked it done or not? But actually,
brilliant.
The thing with Notion is it's so powerful. You can really use those linked databases to do some pretty remarkable things. And so my daily planner page, now, the way that I have it set up now, the first way was probably a bit generic because I was watching these tutorials that were for people who were working from home or for like entrepreneurs and things like that. So I wanted to think more about making it into a more effective teacher planner. So I have a task list. Obviously I use a habit tracker, which I've never used before, but I've been using it for 2 months now and it's amazing. I just I'm one of those people where I like, I want to have the full set of ticks for the day. So if it's kind of like 10:45 at night and I haven't done the reading that I want to do, I'll be like, oh, I've got to do that reading because I've got to get my full set of ticks. And so that's habit trackers.
I can relate to that. You've gamified reading. I love it.
Yeah, I've gamified all sorts of things, actually, all sorts of things that most human beings probably don't need a habit tracker to encourage themselves to do, but that I do. So I have that, and I have this task list, and then I have different pages. So I have a daily planner for when I'm in school. I have a daily planner that is set up for when I'm doing virtual school at home. I have a weekend planner that I open at the weekend that just has sort of tasks, but it doesn't have any of the school stuff. And I have a page that I can look forward to see what my daily planner page will look like tomorrow. And so I'm looking at my daily planner page now. It has the task list, but it has maths, English, and then other subjects. And it pulls through from a sort of like database of planned lessons. And it will pull through to say, like, maths today we're doing page 134 in the textbook. Here's a link to where that is on the online textbook so I can get it up on my whiteboard. Here's the PDF of the page so I can open that up on my iPad really easily. Here's it's tagged to say, you know, we're doing algebra and the kids are going to need their math journals, and so I can see at a glance what that is. And then I'll have like check boxes, so it will say, is it planned? Yes, tick. Have I reviewed it just before the lesson? Yes, tick. And have I taught it? And then when I click that taught box, it goes away, from so I can then easily look at this page and say, oh well, I've done maths today, I've done English today. Because again, as a primary school teacher, we do have a timetable, but that's, I'm the only person in the classroom 90% of the time. So if I want to teach maths before English, I can do that. But I do need to remember to teach English at some point during the day. And then I'll have other subjects. And then you can open that. So if you do find at the end of the day you haven't had the time to teach history, you can then open that up as a calendar, which is another really powerful thing that Notion will allow you to do. It allows you to view your task lists or any database as a calendar. And then you can drag that history lesson into next week. So it will appear on that daily planner page for next week. And I do that a lot with tasks, especially at the moment with virtual school where I have to record lessons that are asynchronous. I'll open up my calendar of my task view and I'll say, well, I've got 7 tasks tomorrow, but I've only got 3 tasks on Friday. So I'll shift those over. That's been really powerful. But yeah, it's taken a lot of... It's gone through a lot of iterations, but I'm quite happy with where things are at the moment.
It's time for a quick ad break. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you will know I love Notion for project management, writing, collecting resources, tracking my reading. It's basically my second brain. If you want to up your Notion game, I highly recommend Marie Poulin's Notion Mastery course. Find out more at theteachingspace.com/Notion course. That sounds amazing. And I think you've illustrated the power of Notion really beautifully there, in the way that you can see stuff you need to see at any given time. And one of the positive impacts of that I've found is that it's really good from a mental health perspective, because you just don't feel quite as overwhelmed all the time. If you're constantly staring at your to-do list, which is a mile long, you know, you start thinking, am I ever going to get to those tasks? But actually, if you're doing snapshots of due dates, or I do a what's coming up in the next 7 days type view, so I know what's on the horizon, you know, you can manage your attention and your energy so much better. I don't know how you feel about that, AJ.
It's so important now that I'm doing virtual school and I'm at home most of the time, because, for example, actually I've got Notion up in front of me now. I just looked at today's page on it. Even though it's a Saturday when we're recording this, my to-do list is a little bit overwhelming with things that are kind of overdue and things. So what I'll do today is at some point I will open up the calendar view and I will rejig all of those. I will do the ones that I definitely need to do that need to be done by Monday, but I will just not have them due in the past. They'll all become due in the future, and I will be able to shift around my workload a lot more easily than if it was on paper or if it was in a diary or something like that, and I'd be scribbling out things and moving things around. And Notion allows me to do that. And then because it's all linked to one central database, that will change it for my daily planner. That will change it. I can go and look at my year 6 page. I can go and look at my professional development page that just brings through for things that are labeled professional development. Go look at my personal page, and it just brings through things that are personal. And that is a huge stress reliever, because although it's a long to-do list, the feeling that I could just easily move something to a different day, that I can prioritize things, is huge for me. And I don't actually, I'm going to stop looking at that to-do list because I'm already starting to think about what I can do on a different day. That is really, really, really important. And and I also have like a daily checklist as well. So it says, you know, is my PowerPoint ready for my morning Zoom assembly, and my afternoon group PowerPoints ready? I use it as a register at the moment to keep track of which students are coming into the groups, which students are going to the morning assembly, which groups students are sending me in work, what kind of engagement.
Oh, brilliant.
And with that, you know, the visual of it is that I can see patterns emerging because it's a big sort of checklist. So that's great. And I use it a lot. I think maybe we can talk about it in a bit, but as a sort of this idea of a second brain is something I'm quite interested in as a dumping ground for your short-term memory, as a sort of an additional module of your long-term memory. That's how I like to think of it, because I'm quite interested in cognitive science, and I know how important that's been in education recently. But it's weird almost, because I'd never heard of it before I came into education, but now I see it both in education but also in the productivity community, talking about short-term and long-term memory, talking about cognitive load, things like that. And I'm just starting to get into the phase now with Notion where I'm seeing its power, not as a simple planner, not as a replacement for a diary or for Todoist, but as an addendum to your long-term memory. And that's something I'm quite interested in.
Absolutely agree with you there. On the sort of task list and well-being side of things, the other thing that occurred to me while you were speaking then was, like you said, you have got a long task list, but the reason why is because things don't get lost. Everything goes into that task list, and that has a really positive effect on well-being, I think, because you've taken everything out of your brain and you've put it into one place. And I think, like, my colleagues are always quite surprised when I remember to follow up on something that they thought I might forget. I don't forget stuff because it all goes in the task list, and I just think that's really powerful.
This sounds a bit preachy, but like, Notion makes you like a better person, because
totally.
You're absolutely right. Like, I don't forget things as much as I used to now, because you put, like, I've trained myself to just like open up the app on my phone, my iPad, my laptop, my school computer, my desktop. It's just a website. You just open it up, literally stick it into your inbox, and you don't even have to do the tagging or anything like that. But it could just be like, you know, follow up on this. I've started setting tasks for like the 1st of December with gift ideas from like friends who are mentioning kind of like, oh, you know, this was an amazing thing that happened, or this inside joke or something. And I'll be like, oh, wow, yeah, maybe I could use that. Before this, I wasn't like, you know, organizationally terrible, always late, always forgetting things. So it's not been revolutionary in that sense. I do consider myself quite an organized person. I pride myself on like punctuality and things like that, but it's definitely made that easier for me to do, and I just like this fact that I don't forget things and things surprise me. I'm like, oh yes, oh no, yeah, great, okay, I definitely need to reply to Richard's email and follow up on that and check how he's getting on. Wow, okay, that actually makes me a better you know, whatever role I'm in, you know, it makes me a better RE lead, because I'm checking in with X teacher 3 weeks after they had an issue to make sure that I'm following up on that. And I definitely would have just forgotten if I hadn't at the time put something 3 weeks into the future. So yeah, I think it's a pretty easy way to make yourself a better, more thoughtful person, because it benefits you as much as it benefits those around you. And I'm not a senior leader. Am I a middle leader? I mean, I'm a head of RE at school, and I do some other stuff across the trust and things like that. But, you know, I can see how for a senior leader, actually, this would be even more, if you were managing people underneath you, this would be a really, really useful way of keeping on track of things.
That's got to be the quote of the podcast interview, hasn't it? Notion makes you a better person. Yeah. There is definitely some truth in that. I liked what you were saying about having an inbox, and I think to people listening to this, even if you're not a Notion user and you don't fancy being a Notion user, the idea of having some sort of quick capture tool, again, I think this is another David Allen GTD concept, the idea of having a very quick and easily accessible place where you capture everything in order to sort of process it later, whether it's putting it in a database, putting it in a to-do list, filing it somewhere, whatever you need to do with it, having that one place is really, really important. And I don't know how you do it in Notion, but I just have a page with a bullet pointed list, and then I sort of deal with things afterwards. What do you do?
Oh yeah, literally just like that, just I have a linked database that shows all the tasks that I have added that aren't yet tagged. And the last thing I'll do with a task is tag it. So that's kind of like my inbox, because I know that those are things I know I need to do, but I might not have even put a date in for them. I might not even have. The other incredibly powerful thing about Notion is that everything is its own page. So a task can contain within it images, links, hyperlinks, documents, all sorts of stuff. So that is what I'm finding really, really useful at the moment, is where with YouTube, for example, you can put in a task of like, well, no, maybe with virtual school teaching. So you can put in a task of like record lesson 5 of geography. And on a traditional paper to-do list, you're like, okay, right, well, now I need to like find the link to this, find the link to that, what videos I'm going to watch. I can just stick that all inside the task in Notion. So I find that, and that kind of curation of your productivity is really important. It's another thing of like, how much time and effort do you put into productivity processes versus how much time and effort do you put into your actual work. But I think probably in getting things done, it says that you need to devote at least a little bit of time every day to emptying your quick capture, to organizing your thoughts, to producing plans and things of that nature, because I've probably done quick capture my whole life in terms of like looking at my Twitter drafts or my draft emails or my notes app on my phone or the back pages of diaries and notebooks. But if you don't ever look at what you've written again, it's not really quick capture, it's quick burying. It's like, you know, I had a thought, oh, that's nice. But with Notion, it kind of forces you at the end of the day to look at what's not yet been dealt with, which I find really, that is a really big part of it.
Definitely. And if you're only putting your quick capture stuff in one place and you have a routine or a habit attached to checking it, then you're never going to lose anything. But if you're quick capturing in various spots, then things do get lost. So I think, you know, it's just a great sort of productivity strategy to live by. Have that quick capture area, process it, certainly at least every couple of days. But if you can process it daily, that's definitely a good practice. A few minutes ago, you mentioned this idea of a second brain. And like you, I'm seeing this phrase crop up a lot in the productivity sphere. And certainly over the past couple of years in education, cognitive science has been something we're talking about a lot more. So I'd quite like to just dig into that briefly, if I may. I'm certainly starting to develop my notion into something of a second brain, but maybe you'd like to share your take on it.
Well, for me, what it is it's having an exterior part of your brain. I think I've always been very much of the idea before this that, you know, I have for large periods of my life done without a diary, done without a to-do list, full stop, done without writing things down, because I'm actually not someone who forgets a lot of things. I'm not someone who perhaps needs to be super organized just in order to basically function. So especially when I've been working in jobs like in call centers and things like that, my life didn't have a lot of, I guess this phrase that we used earlier, texture to it, that needed different organizational features. Now I can see, kind of looking back, oh, the lost capacity in my life if I just had some sort of system in place. And what I've learned as a teacher and learning about cognitive science is perhaps just how much work you need to put into maintaining your long-term memory of things. So we've all had, as teachers, as educators, as anyone working in any sector, we've all had a thorough education. We've all come across things that we're interested in. We all have shelves of books and we all have notebooks, and I've got folders of PGC notes and folders of postgraduate notes and undergraduate notes and all sorts. But that's not a second brain in the sense that it's organized in any meaningful way. It's not an external form of our long-term memory. It's just dusty books and notes, and it's fine, but it's not well organized in any sense. Whereas the magical thing that our brains are really good at is organizing our long-term memory. So I can, you know, if someone said to me now Helsinki, suddenly instantly I've brought up every sort of memory from the holiday, well, from the work trip that I went on to Helsinki. I can think of how cheap sushi was in Finland because they have fresh fish available there. I can think of the sound of the trams moving around the streets. I can think of the electronic shop I had to go to buy a phone charger adapter. All of that is weirdly instantly available to me in a way that if someone said Heidegger's Being and Time, you have to give me 20 minutes to go and dig my notes out on that. So second brain is about creating a sort of database system, I call it a knowledge base, where I'm trying to mimic that instant availability of knowledge from my long-term memory. And I can start to free up my long-term memory, because if I just had a CPD session that was really interesting, instead of trying to internalize and memorize everything and have it all instantly available there, I know that I can rely on having all my knowledge in one place, searchable, catalog, database tagged, to go and find that when I need to again. And I know it'll be more accurate as well, because maybe sushi wasn't that cheap in Helsinki. Maybe that was when I went to Oslo that it was really cheap. Maybe it's really expensive in Helsinki. I don't know. You know, our memory is not infallible, whereas to an extent, well, not infallible, but a knowledge base in Notion is a lot more less corruptible, shall we say. And so that's what I started doing. So for CPD, for professional stuff, for reading, I take notes digitally on my iPad using GoodNotes, which is an app that's out there that people can go and watch lots of good YouTube videos about. And then I will export those notes as a PDF. And by far and away, the most impressive thing that GoodNotes does is it will allow all of your handwritten notes to be searchable. Uses yes. OCR. If you've used handwriting recognition at any point before about 2017, forget everything you knew about it. Before that, it was terrible. I think they've set machine learning to work on it. I think they've done all sorts of wonders. My handwriting is not great, but recently I was doing a YouTube video and I searched through my own notes for something and I was like, wow, that really is every single mention of it in these 20 pages of handwritten notes.
So that's then amazing.
I'll export that as a PDF, import that into Notion, and I have like a notes library. I can see all the talks I've been on. I can see the notes. I can see links to the videos, links to the handout, the PowerPoints. And that's just the start, really. I want that to kind of become wider, so these my hobbies and interests and other parts of my life to start to be brought into that. But yeah, so it's kind of, I guess, an extension, an improvement on long-term memory.
Do you think there's a danger of becoming sort of just collecting too much information? I guess there's never a case where there's too much information, but I sometimes worry that in Notion I gather all this interesting stuff to read and these ideas and this inspiration. I think I worry that perhaps it's possible to have too much and that you don't revisit it often. And what do you think about that?
Yeah, okay. I think for me, one of the things that attracts me to the second brain idea is that it is like, it's like memory. You do kind of indiscriminately remember things, a bit like the idea of having an inbox. It's that part of my organizational life is quite indiscriminate in what I retain, with the idea being that you do something with that information. Actually, I completely forgotten about this. I saw this amazing talk at the National Inset Day. It was David Weston talking about developing great teaching. He said, you have to do something with what you learn at your CPD. You have to do something with it. If you don't, so that's actually, I remember after seeing that now, when I have this knowledge base, when I have each page for whatever I've been reading or whatever I've been making notes on, I now have an implementation section. How am I actually going to implement that in my life? And I can look, I can create a page with a linked database that pulls through every implementation section of notes from each of these pages, because that's the magic of Notion. And I can just look and say, am I doing that? Yes. Am I doing that? No, but I should be. Am I doing that? No, because it now seems like a bad idea. Delete, you know, get rid of that, or put a note on that says, you know, actually don't do that. So I guess, no, I think part of the appeal of it is that it's indiscriminate. I think part of the appeal of it is that it's quite all-encompassing, as long as you are doing something with it, whether that's curating it, acting on it, transforming it, translating it. That's what we always talk about with the kids, you know, that transforming the information is an important step into learning it, being able to play with it, make it malleable, make it applicable to your professional life or your personal life. So I could see if you were just literally whacking in PDF documents or links, if it was kind of hopeful and optimistic that you might someday read these things, that would not be great. But this is all things that I've read and that I've done and that I want to keep track of. So I guess it's not something I'm too worried about at the moment, but talk to me in a year's time and maybe it's all a mess and I'll hate it and I'll go back to my paper diary.
That's such a good answer. I really like the idea of curating or collecting items with an action attached. So you're making your second brain actionable. And that's really interesting. And quite honestly, I think we could probably record an entirely new podcast episode on that subject alone. There's loads to dig into there. Yeah. I'm conscious we're running out of time a little bit. But I think we've probably whetted the appetite of many, many listeners. So I'm thinking it would be a really good idea for you to sort of share your YouTube channel, because you've been recording some amazing videos on YouTube about Notion, but about other things, about taking notes and studying and things like that. Just tell us a little bit about the channel and we can certainly direct people to it.
So there's not, it's a new project for me. I've only been doing this for a month, but it's based on years of watching YouTube. I'm a huge YouTube fan and I've always thought, you know, it'd be fun to do a YouTube channel. But then I sat down, I learned Adobe Premiere and I sort of took it quite seriously and I set up a little studio for myself and things. So it's something I put quite a lot of thought into before I started. So some of the really nice comments I've had back was like, well, oh, actually, that's quite professional for your first video. Well, that looks quite, you know, well thought through. This is quite by design, because I wanted to make sure that it was going well. And it links into this whole community that got me started on Notion of I guess it's called Study Tube or Productivity Tube, but people who are... So if you want to get started on Notion, just go to YouTube and take a look, because people will talk you through their setups, talk you through, you can take bits, people share templates, it's great. If people want to find me, YouTube's a bit tricky because it doesn't give you like a username. Mm-hmm. You can search for AJ Smith Notion and I should come up. Or if you take a look at my Twitter, which is Mr. Smith RE, I think at my pinned tweet is probably one of my videos, or you can have a search through and find it. But yes, AJ Smith Notion should bring up my video about how I use Notion as a teacher planner from a month ago.
Amazing. And I'll make sure that I have all of these links on the show notes so people can refer back to them as well. And I completely, I'm in awe of the fact that you got such positive comments. I mean, I can see why, because your first video was outstanding and led to us having this conversation, you know, so that's testament to the quality of the video and also the learning that you did. But people on YouTube can be brutal. So to have got a load of positive comments.
People on the internet can be brutal. You have to have quite a thick skin, I think.
Yeah. This is true. You put yourself out there, you have to have a thick skin. But certainly for me, YouTube has been a very useful tool in learning all about Notion and other productivity approaches as well. Mm. I also recently invested in Marie Poulin's Notion Mastery course, which is quite a high price course, but I was ready to really kind of up my game with Notion. And I found that to be really very helpful. Have you done any courses on Notion at all? Or is it just your kind of YouTube learning?
No, I think just YouTube, and I think I just like to get my hands in there and muck about and see what I can do, you know. And that's good with Notion because you know because you're doing it online. If bullet journals, you know, everyone loves a bullet journal, but if you muck up and have to tear out a page, it's literally, it feels like tearing your own pancreas out of your own body. It's that painful. But with Notion, you just undo, delete, get rid of, create a sandbox, have a go, and that's the joy of it, really. That I find that really liberating.
The joy of digital, honestly, that's the reason why I could never. I used to love buying those really beautiful moleskin notebooks, and then I was always terrified to actually write in them. So yeah, digital all the way over here.
I've got boxes full of them, but digital note taking is the same. You just, if you've got any kind of anxiety about that, digital note taking is transformational because suddenly the erase is so easy and so. And everything is so undoable. It's wonderful.
Absolutely. AJ, before I wrap up the interview, because believe me, I could geek out with you for hours on all of this stuff. Is there anything you'd like to sort of leave the podcast listeners with before we wrap things up?
Don't force yourself to use any form of productivity that doesn't feel right to you. So don't do it for the aesthetic. Don't do it because someone else has worked for someone else. It's the same. People always say this with books as well. You know, if you're reading a book and you're 150 pages in and the book is 800 pages long and you're not enjoying it, stop. Because life is too short. There's a cost benefit to it. There's quite a big learning curve with Notion. There's quite a big time investment up front. And if you just look at it and you think, I don't really know what a database is, then there are other things out there that are much more like user-friendly. Notion is I think you'll agree, it's a bit of a geek's heaven, but it's not as user-friendly, and it's still in quite early development as well. They're bringing out an API for it, so maybe that will change, but yeah.
Excellent. What a great way to leave things. AJ, it's been a real pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thanks for coming on. And I look forward to geeking out with you again in the future.
Thanks. It's been lovely to be here.
Thank you for listening to the Teaching Space podcast. You can find the show notes for this episode at theteachingspace.com.